What's up, gang? Welcome to Beards and Banter.
We're excited to have Justin Parmenter here. For those who don't know, Justin is a teacher in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District. And we're going to talk about some back-to-school stuff in this episode. And we're trying something a little different, having a little co-host here, so this should be cool.
Yeah, Justin's going to be our co-pilot today, so he's going to make sure that we stay in line here and don't do anything crazy or random, but it is Darrell and Patrick, and crazy stuff does happen. How are you doing today, Justin?
Good. I just want you all both to know that I am empowered to assign lunch detention if need be, so be on your best behavior, please.
It's a place I know about very well. What about you, Patrick?
Never.
What?
Yeah.
You ever been suspended?
Nope.
Today might be your day, Patrick.
Wow, I hope so. Let's get into it.
Well, yeah, so like it's back to school, you know, getting ready for another great year. What year would this be for you?
This is going to be year 30 for me.
Year 30. Wow. Thank you for all that you do, given the climate that we're in. We appreciate you so much. Patrick, let's talk about our public school memories. You know, I've been out of school for a while. I won't say how long, but it's been a while. Do you have any favorite subjects in school? Anything that you...
English.
English?
Yeah. My third grade teacher at Davis Drive Elementary, Miss Dagenhart, she, like, got me started, wanting to write. And that kind of... I guess that's where my love of writing began. But yeah, so shout out to her. She was a great teacher, and that set me up for a career of wanting to write. So, what about you?
Well, the person that you see today was totally different in school. I was a kind of a bad kid, so I appreciate y'all for dealing with, you know, the Darrells out there. Smart kids, great kids, but also just, you know, all over the place. I would say I hated math.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And to this day, I hate math. It doesn't sit with me. I can count my money, so that's a good thing, and it's not a lot to count, so that's easy. But I had a geometry teacher in high school, Ms. Blackwell, and honestly, I think I was thinking about the show, and I was reflecting on this. She was actually the first black teacher I had throughout my public school education. And that was maybe 10th grade. Mm-hmm. This is my geometry teacher. And I hated math so much. And I still hate it. Let's not get it twisted. But her energy and passion and attention to detail to making the world of geometry so much more explainable to us, but also relatable to kind of, like, for example, I'm not getting it. How about basketball? Let me show you how this like, she spent so much time and energy, like, trying to relate to how geometry plays in everyday life. And you can tell even from the students that were going to go and be great mathematicians and A students all the way down to the Darrells that were making bad grades and just barely getting by, she took the time, effort, and energy to really focus on making sure it relates to us in a way that we understand. So I really appreciate her for that, just because I probably, if I was in her shoes, I'd probably be like, you know what, kid, just draw some pictures and we'll go from there. But she really, like, seriously, like, and the fact that I still remember her lets you know how impactful she was. So just the passion and energy she had in what she did and what she does makes me think, like, okay, I need to apply that into my life. Like, whatever I'm doing, that passion and energy, but also make sure you're not leaving anybody behind in terms of explaining and make sure they understand things. So I appreciate her for that because,
whew. You say your first black teacher was in 10th grade?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
My first was in 2nd grade.
Yeah. And I thought really hard about it because I didn't want to be incorrect, but then I really, like, did some digging. I'm like, no. And think about it is, it wasn't necessarily that I remember the class. I remember me doing something bad in the class. That's how it backtracked, but yeah. Yeah. What was your favorite school memory, Justin?
Favorite teacher?
Yeah, favorite teacher and favorite memory of school.
So my first black teacher was in 10th grade, too. Mm. And, you know, my father had a job. We moved around a lot when I was a kid, so we you know, were all over the place, and really wasn't in one place too long to kind of grow roots. But we settled in Missouri when I was, I think, in 7th grade, and my parents, I grew up in a very religious home. My parents had me in going to a private school. We did not have much money, our family, but it wasn't vouchers, but it was a private school that offered some scholarship money to families in need. Mm-hmm. And so I was there. It was a Christian school. I think there was one black student in the school, all white kids, super affluent. It was not a great experience for a kid from a middle-class family who was like going through junior high and painfully self-conscious and all that kind of thing. It was not great. But what happened was the scholarship money ran out after ninth grade. Mm-hmm. And so my parents were faced with a decision and ended up that I ended up enrolling in public school at that point. So from 10th grade until I graduated, I went from this affluent county school in St. Louis, you know, not diverse whatsoever, totally sheltered life, to now I'm going to school in St. Louis in the city. It was during desegregation, so I was being bused from the county into the city to attend this school, which was a great school. It was a magnet school, college prep, small, open campus in a really cool part of St. Louis. And, you know, it was a completely new world for me. Mm-hmm. As a student, as a human, it was just a new experience. And, you know, I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for many years. But, you know, I was that bad student, too. I don't want to say bad student seems like the wrong choice of words. Yeah. I had an attitude problem at that time. I may have a suspension on my record from high school as well. And so, you know, I was all about this school. This has nothing to do with me. You know, I don't even know why I'm here. And when I got to her English class, you know, I think I share some of your views on math, Patrick, but, you know, my skills were in communication and were in writing and reading. That was my love. Mm-hmm. And but when I got to her class and she helped, she connected me with some authors. It was transcendentalism. It was these guys, Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, mm-hmm. Henry David Thoreau, and it was reading about how you know, not to rely on other people and to be independent and not follow the crowd. And it was just the first time in my whole, all the way up until 10th grade, it was the first time that I had ever felt like something that I was doing in school was speaking to me as a person. Mm. It was about me. It was important to me. And it was a transformational experience for me. Her name was Cynthia Beasley, first black teacher I had. And just that whole experience of getting into that school where now it's like this school is actually what St. Louis looks like. Mm-hmm. This is what the world looks like. And I came from this, like I said, a super sheltered background. And so it was just a really important turning point in my life, I think. And, you know, I'll always be grateful to Cynthia Beasley for helping me feel like school was about me and there was something there for me instead of just this kind of wall I had built around myself that this has no connection with my life.
That's awesome.
So what'd you guys get suspended? What did you get?
I knew it was coming.
Oh, man. You know, I have no idea who's going to be listening to this later. Let's just say it was a poor choice of judgment, but it was only a one-day suspension. And okay. In fact, it was in-school suspension, so I just sat in the library the whole time.
Yeah, probably nothing too.
It was not assault.
Okay. That's good. What about you?
Next question. I had an altercation in school. This is actually in the fifth grade. Why do I remember this? Because it was one of the teacher's sons. So it was during, we were playing basketball. It was a basketball related. They wasn't like nothing crazy, but it was very competitive. Fifth graders playing basketball and got a little out of hand, but it was like all of like half a second. So we both got suspended for a day, which was interesting because he was in my class and she was out there with her other class and it happened. And she was just as fair to me as she was to him with punishment. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
So yeah, just kids out of control, so it taught us a lesson. But yeah, that's what I was suspended for. Also, probably skipping a couple of classes in high school, but yeah.
Cool.
I feel bad now, but hey, growth. Cheers to growth. Cheers to growth. All right. I guess outside of educators, the public school experience, Patrick, is there any memory from school that stands out to you in terms of just like something that you just carry with you that, I mean, it could be funny. It could be wherever you want it to be, but just a memory from school that just you sit back and you think about from time to time.
My senior year of high school, I came in second for best hair for the boys. Or maybe we weren't men, but, you know, they had the senior superlatives or whatever. And And I came in second for best hair. And I remember the kid who won. I know his name. I'm not going to say it. But he shouldn't have won.
Oh, you had better hair?
Oh, for sure, yeah. No. He had, yeah.
Don't worry about whatever. It, yeah.
I had, like, luscious, crazy, long.
Luscious.
Yeah, it was intense. Like, it was a lot of hair, and it definitely it was better than that other kid's greasy hair. I'm just gonna say that, but so that's
it was rigged.
I mean, in fairness, like my senior year, I only had to take like one class a day, so I was like out of school by like 10.
Oh, excuse me.
And so, like, you know, I probably just wasn't there enough for people to really remember how great my hair was.
You wanted that trophy, huh?
I mean, it would have been nice, you know, like some sort of recognition. And yeah, so I remember that.
Yeah, there and, you go.
But, you know, like that's probably the worst thing that happened to me in high school. So I feel pretty lucky.
Not too bad.
I didn't get any ass beatings or anything. So it's okay.
I think for me, the funny thing is, so I'm thinking back at my days at Sanderson High School, and our rival was Millbrook High School, especially in football. And Millbrook used to always seem to get the best of us. And I think this one year, I can't remember what year it was, but both of our teams were like on the undefeated path, and we're rivals who played at the end of the season. And the game was, it was a home game for us, I believe. I think it was a homecoming game too, which is even scarier. Don't quote me on none of this. But I do remember our one of our teachers was actually the football coach. And so he was like the great motivator. He played college football at NC State. Mr. Gillespie, by the way. Played college football at NC State. Played for Lou Holtz there. Always talked about, his big thing was just like John Glenn, the astronaut. So everything was John Glenn, baby. So whole fun thing there. So getting ready, pep rally. We're playing Millbrook. They usually get the best of us. Undefeated teams going into it. Somebody's going to win a division tonight. And the pep rally, he decided to dress up as Millbrook's mascot, which is the Wildcat. So he called himself Wildcat. He made little videos and stuff and all types of fun, like just having fun with it and just saying how everybody's going to be. Try to get everybody motivated and hyped. So at the pep rally, we're all hyped. We're ready to go. We're going to win tonight. We're going to beat the crap out of Millbrook. Let's just say they won. I think the score was like 63-0. And I remember that because I remember just how everyone was so, we're used to losing to them. And everyone was so, like, motivated. Like, he was, like, motivating people. Like, I mean, kids were coming. Like, the game was packed. The parking lot was packed. Like, it was like he motivated people to turn out to something. And we actually believed there was going to be a different outcome. It was the same outcome. So it was just a funny memory that, like, gosh, y'all, we had a great season. I mean, we went to the playoffs and had a good run in the playoffs. But it was just the fact that we got to ask this by our rival, and we hyped ourselves up so much for that. So I'll never forget that. That was just the funniest thing to me.
It's humbling, I'm sure, for
it was humbling someone. For a lot of folks. Yeah. I didn't play, so, yeah. I mean, I was just like, dang, that happened.
I got one to share, but it's early in my teaching career, so mm-hmm. It was kind of on the other side of the equation, but I was working, so my first job in the United States teaching was in Arizona on the White Mountain Apache Reservation. Mm. And I was working with a science teacher on the sixth grade team, and he came up with this idea to do a project where we could like work together, and I could have the English side, you know, and he could do the science side, and it would kind of be like this wonderful experience for the learning experience for the students. And it was a moldiest bread contest.
Oh.
So the way it worked is, you know, we gave each student one slice of bread, like Wonder Bread or whatever. And they had 2 weeks. They could, you know, do whatever they wanted to it. They could put some weird stuff on it, you know, put some cream cheese on it, water, you know, put it in a plastic bag, you know, leave it out in the sun, whatever they wanted, whatever approach they wanted to take, no rules at all. And 2 weeks, after 2 weeks, all of them had to bring their bread in on the same day. And it was a contest. And I think I'm trying to remember, this is a long time ago. I think the English part, maybe they had to, you know, write a haiku about it or something like that. So the day of the contest, all these kids brought this moldy bread in, and they were awful. I mean, they were just like mold growing, you know, 2-3 inches high. And we put them all, we had cleared out the trophies in the trophy case in the front, which was, you walk into the front office, there's this big glass display case in front of where, you know, the secretary, front office staff works. And so we made this big display and put all this moldy bread in there. Didn't really think ahead like to what the consequences of that action might be. And so, you know, it was a couple days later, or I mean, a couple hours later when, you know, everybody came in and got ready for the school day, that front office smelled so bad that no one could walk in there at all. And so everybody had to take their stuff and go set up, you know, bring their computers and go set up in classrooms and work for the rest of the day. And we were never permitted to do that contest ever again. The moldiest bread contest was one and done.
Sounds like a horrible prank.
It was pretty bad.
Now we're getting serious. Education over the past 10, 15 years has been highly politicized. And with your experience, you've seen a lot of changes over time. What differences, if any, has it made in how teachers do their job?
You know, I think that as I could speak from my own experience and say that, you know, I started teaching in North Carolina in 2002. You know, everything seemed fine for a while. I came from Arizona, where I think the pay was at the bottom of the barrel, and in North Carolina it was in the middle of the barrel, and so it was a big step up for me. And it was fine for a few years, and then we hit the economic recession in 2008, around that time frame, where with all the bad loans that were made and all that kind of thing. And so, you know, they started laying off teachers. And this is before the Republicans took over the General Assembly, but it was hard. You know, it was already getting bad. And but, you know, still, and then even after the revolution of 2010, the supermajorities in both chambers and the policy changes that started to happen after that, you know, I still kind of like, I was focused on within the four walls of my classroom and didn't know really much of what was going on outside. But, you know, the longer I stuck with the work, the more I saw things starting to change. You know, like all of a sudden we don't have enough paper to make photocopies. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do? Like, we're living in the year, you know, 2015, and we have to, like, squirrel away paper and try to hoard stuff, you know, because we don't have enough, or we have this position that, you know, we don't have the money to hire for, so kids don't have a Spanish teacher this year. So I think, you know, for me, like, I think I came to the political consciousness of why all these things were happening a little bit later than some, but I think over that period of time, you know, a lot of people have seen the impact of just the work getting harder and the resources drying up and the staffing challenges that, you know, happen as a result of that. It's pretty hard to not be aware of kind of like the trajectory of education in North Carolina if you're living that work every day.
What do you think is the biggest challenge facing our public schools, or like a couple of the big challenges that are facing our public schools right now?
I think, you know, we always talk about the struggle for resources, because it's real and it's something that really affects, I think, the way that we're able to do our jobs effectively and the learning outcomes for kids. That doesn't seem like it's going to get better anytime soon. It seems like it's probably going to get worse, because, you know, there's a finite amount of resources. And when you start, you know, sending that, diverting that into different directions, the pot that was there for you, you know, the level keeps dropping. There's just less and less. So, you know, we've got the buzzwords of school choice have really come to the front of our conversations about education over the past few years. And, you know, I personally think that every parent should have the right to make decisions about what's best for their kids. It's great when you're in the position to have those type of options. But, you know, when the choices that someone else makes impacts yourself and you know, your opportunities and your education, I think is a little bit of a different conversation. So I do think that, you know, the trend that we're seeing, especially over the last couple years, with the explosion of money that we're diverting towards private schools, I think that is probably one of our biggest challenges. And those two things go hand in hand, because, you know, if you're tripling the amount of money that you're putting into school vouchers, that money is going to affect what resources are available to help, you know, the vast majority of kids that are going to public schools.
Yeah, and that money is, it's our money, taxpayer money.
It is.
It's supposed to be going to public schools.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, I mean, it's but good news, I guess, for now at least. It looks like that the private school voucher bill is it failed. Now, by the time this airs, they may have come back and figured it out. But
we'll have to see. You never know. You would think that, you know, when you have a veto-proof supermajority in both chambers, that you would be able to, like, make decisions and actually move some policy. But it, maybe it's harder than it looks from the outside. I don't know.
Well, I mean, good for us. You know, if they can't get their house in order, that's probably better for everyone in North Carolina. So, speaking of
oh boy, I know where this is going
with bad ideas. what do you think, if any, impact someone like Michelle Morrow, who's running, completely unqualified, running to be the next public school superintendent here. She's running against Mo Green, who's very qualified, has actually worked in public schools before. What if someone like Michelle Morrow wins, what does that mean for teachers, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, people are definitely concerned. But, you know, I think we need to be clear that the exodus is already happening. This is not about, are people going to start leaving public schools if this person is elected or that person is elected? The exodus is already happening. I think the question is it going to get worse? You know, the numbers that came out this past year, and I brought this with me because I wanted to make sure I got these numbers right. There's a little bit of a lag in data. So we've got basically data from like the previous school year that, mm-hmm. that comes out. But the numbers for 2022-23, we had a 47% increase in teacher turnover. So over the year before. And so that means that between March 2022 and March 2023, we have 1 in 9 teachers quit. Those numbers just sound like numbers, you know, it just sounds like data, it's a little cold, you know, that I checked the number, it's 10,373 teachers that quit. That doesn't really sound like, you know, it doesn't touch you as much to just talk about the data, but I want to, you know, bring it back to like each one of those. You were talking about that teacher that made a difference for you in 10th grade, mm-hmm. and your teacher in 3rd grade. And there are, you know, that same story is happening for just about every kid in North Carolina, you know. And a lot of those kids, you know, that's the person they look forward to when they come to school. Mm-hmm. That's the person maybe who is going to change their the way that they think about education and their future. And if that teacher's just not there one day, what's the effect that has on the kid? I think in North Carolina, one thing I've learned over the last 10 years is that, you know, things can get to a certain point, but they can always get worse. Like, I don't know how much worse, they seem to always be able to get worse. The exodus is already going on. Could it accelerate? Yeah, it could. Electing a governor who calls public school employees wicked people. That probably won't help. You know, Mark Robinson also, one of the first things he did when he took over as lieutenant governor, he set up a website and encouraged the public to file complaints about teachers.
Which backfired.
Which backfired.
Not go well
for backfired. And mostly, you know, the submissions were just people trolling Mark Robinson. But, you know, there were also, there were a number that were submitted, people complaining about what happened. You know, the teacher made our kid watch CNN in civics class or whatever. He published all of those reports without redacting or substantiating anything that was in them, which seems problematic. So, you know, electing a guy like that, yeah, it's not going to help people who are working in classrooms feel confident about staying. Electing someone superintendent who refers to our work as, this is a quote, a cesspool of evil and lies, that probably won't help either.
No.
It's scary to think about these people that we see, what we hear what they're saying, and we know who they are as individuals. I think for teachers, like I said, you know, you're working within the confines of the four walls of the classroom. You kind of have to see like, what's the impact going to mean to me when I show up for work? Like, how is this going to translate? Mm-hmm. And I think we know it's going to be bad. We don't know how bad it's going to be or exactly, like, how is that loathing of public education going to translate into policy decisions? I think, you know, that's the part that we kind of have to wait and see. Yeah, it's going to be bad. It's just a matter of how bad, and that's a question that's going to have to unfold on its own.
Yeah, that's sobering.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're a middle school teacher, right? Mm-hmm. So your students, they're not old enough to vote yet, but have they, like, do they see what's going on at all, or is it kind of just like they're not quite old enough?
It's a good question. You know, middle school kids are very curious. They don't hold back. You know, no filters for sure. You know, as a teacher, as the one who's kind of directing some of those conversations in class, I'm pretty careful about not engaging in political discussions. You know, partly it's school policy. Partly it's that, you know, I walk around with a pretty big target on my back already as it is. And so, but, you know, kids are very perceptive, and they notice what's happening around them. And they notice when there hasn't been a math teacher this school year, and they have a revolving door of substitute teachers that are coming in. And, you know, God love them, substitute teachers do heroes work, but they're also not trained and equipped with some of the tools that you need to be able to have that classroom atmosphere that is engaging and motivating, mm-hmm. and positive, and, you know, results in student learning. And, you know, a lot of kids say, I hate school, I don't care about this, this is not for me. But at the end of the day, they also don't want to be sitting there bored from, you know, 8 o'clock until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, they prefer to be engaged and be able to, like, make contributions and feel like they're doing something that's worth their time. And so, you know, kids are aware of who their leaders are. They see what is happening. I think they see, just like the teachers see, the lack of support that there is, the lack of adequate resources, and the effects of leadership are not lost on them, even though, you know, they may be 12, 13 years old.
And you mentioned having a target on your back. Do you have a, we'll show for the YouTube folks, we'll show, you got a picture of you with Representative Dan Bishop, who's currently running for Attorney General here, you know, election denier, author of the bathroom bill, not a great guy, probably. But you have sort of some amount of a relationship with him. Explain that to us.
It's been a little up and down with Dan Bishop, a little up and down. Yeah. So, you know, Dan Bishop, I actually, the first time I met Dan Bishop, I had this fellowship, and this is kind of how I got involved in, like, being interested in policy and politics and education. Policy was that I got on this fellowship with this group called the North Carolina Teacher Voice Network. It's defunct now. It was around for 3 or 4 years. And the way that worked is, you know, they would give you, it was a fellowship, they'd give you a little bit of money, and you would commit to, well, I mean, there's some trainings involved, you know, teaching us about how power works in North Carolina, you know, how policy decisions are made. You know, one big takeaway for me was that just about every education policy decision that's made is made with zero insight or, you know, without being informed whatsoever by the people who are actually doing the work. And that hasn't changed at all. And so, you know, I think that, and also there was a writing component too. And so we were required to write, you know, op-eds and that kind of thing. And that's how I started getting involved with the writing. You know, I knew how to write. I was an English teacher, but I had never thought about writing an op-ed about standardized testing or about, you know, this law or that law. And I started doing that. And I, you know, it felt like I was being empowered to do something for the first time, you know. I was able to speak about my experiences as a classroom teacher and in a way that could help other people understand what it was like that wouldn't have that view of it otherwise. And so that really appealed to me, and I really took to that. But you asked a question about Dan Bishop. So they also encourage that, you know, our policymakers need to understand what that experience is like. And so you should invite them to come into your schools and visit your classrooms. And so Dan Bishop was the first person I invited to come to my school. And this was September 2016. I think HB2 had been passed that spring. So he was already Dan, like the Dan Bishop. He was already bathroom Dan or whatever you want to call him. And so he came to visit. There's a picture that, you know, y'all might want to show your viewers of. I don't think we have our arms around each other, but, you know, it was pretty close, and it was cordial, and, you know, so that's how it started. That was before he realized I was a Marxist. And, you know, I was not forthright in sharing that information with him. I probably should have from the beginning. But, yeah, so, you know, even at that time, and that was about, you know, let's get this policymaker in here. It's not about talking about, you know, what his work has done. This is just about giving him a chance to see what a public school looks like on the inside. Probably never seen one before, you know, and maybe think about how your policies are affecting the people that work in this building and the people that come in here to learn. So, you know, that happened in 2016. As I watched, as I became more engaged in politics and watched him, especially his career path, you know, he just kept winning. And every time he won another election, it wasn't because he was good at his job ever. It was because of gerrymandering. Every single time, you know, it was that the maps were redrawn this time. You know, let's get this little pocket of voters out of that district so this person can win. And, you know, he just kept falling up. And there was that in 2018 when he was elected to Congress, you know, y'all remember it was that election where they had been ballot harvesting, you know, there was some shady business with the absentee ballots in Bladen County or something like mm-hmm. that. And so the only reason he won that seat in Congress is because the other dude was such a crook that, you know, he ended up getting caught tampering with ballots. And so he fell up again, you know. And so that's irritating when you see someone being so bad at their job and you just can't get rid of them. That's bad enough. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the election in 2020, for me, Dan Bishop's villainy just like, you know, it went from a 10 to like past the scale, you know, because the way that he was involved in, you know, sharing lies about the election and it was rigged. And, you know, I mean, he has this tweet, and I share this online all the time. He had this tweet that he had written in December, and it was pinned to his Twitter profile. I just want to make sure I get the words right. It says, "The American people will not stand for a rigged election." And it was pinned to his Twitter profile. On January 6th, all of us watched the scenes of people rampaging through the Capitol, carrying the Confederate flag, you know, ransack, like calling for Mike Pence to be hanged, literally murdered by a mob. And, you know, and Dan Bishop had something to do with all of that, why that stuff happened, mm-hmm. right? So I still have a screenshot that shows the time that was pinned. It was still pinned to his profile at 5:43 p.m. that day. Somehow between January 6th and January 7th, it got unpinned. So I guess, you know, when you know your constituents are watching policemen be sprayed in the face with bear repellent, you know, that might be problematic for your back the blue line. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just such a coward. And he has not, you know, to this day, I haven't heard him say the words President Biden. So he still wants to live with that whole, you know, it was rigged and all this kind of thing. And so now he wants to be our attorney general. He wants to be the top law enforcement official in North Carolina and be tasked with enforcing our election laws. And so, you know, I think just as a North Carolinian, as someone who really wants leaders who are honest, who are on our side, you know, who are not, whose whole existence isn't just, you know, to hold on to power and to be in Donald Trump's pocket, but to actually serve North Carolina, I think that's what keeps me motivated to, like, I can't let it go. I can't. I'm sorry. So I know maybe, you know, 12 tweets a day at Dan Bishop might be, like, seem a little bit weird to some people, but I'm in it for the long haul. And, you know, if he loses on November 5th, I promise you on November 6th, well, maybe on November 6th might be a couple, like, parting tweets, but after that, I'm done.
You're done?
That's it.
And the fun part about it is you live rent-free in his head because he responds. And he actually has a back and forth with you. So I think that's the most interesting part. And go on X or Twitter or whatever they call it this day. follow this guy right here, and then watch him and Dan Bishop have fun. So Dan takes time out of his day for you. So
he does.
We can't we can't question his record about, you know, interacting with the people.
That's true. But, you know, in his defense, I mean, he's not really doing a whole lot of actual work in Congress, so he's got a lot of free time. So and not much to do with it.
So when are you going to run for office?
Run for office. I don't know what the process is to make, you know, the wages of legislators like an actual livable wage. That might need to happen first.
I mean, you're a teacher and not making a livable wage.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, and that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem with, and not just with educators, but with you know, all working class people in North Carolina is you can't. You don't have representation, really, you know. If somebody can figure out a way to get into office, we just had Rodney Pierce in Halifax County won the primary against Michael Ray, who has been, you know, has made some questionable decisions over the last few years, and Rodney is a teacher. He's a history teacher, a fantastic teacher, and he was elected, and he's... You know, he's figured out a way to make it work, which I think is amazing, because, you know, everybody, I mean, the whole idea of political representation is you have people who are making decisions that understand what your needs are because they are you, you know, and instead we have people who are, I don't know what, you know, it's $12,000 a year or something like that, you know, they get a little per diem maybe, and that's why we have, you know, doctors and lawyers who are making all these decisions for us because they're the people who have the money that they can take all this time off and you know, go to Raleigh and not work, and they can still put food on the table at home. And so I would love to be involved in, you know, especially just having watched, you know, the failure of leadership in this country on so many levels for so long, you know, at some time, and you all may feel this way too, you know, it's like, well, I don't know if I could be good at that, but I couldn't be any worse.
Yeah, right.
I mean, how is that possible? So, you know, I think I would love to be involved, whether that's on school board or at the legislature or somewhere in the future, but I think for me it would need to be, you know, I've got young kids at home and a family that depends on me to put a roof over their head, and so I think it would probably be either, you know, I win the lottery or after retirement, something like that.
We'll keep an eye out.
All right, thank you. Yeah.
But just to bring it back, like we talked about, you know, the challenges in education, you know, what's been happening over the past decade, what continues to happen, how it may look going forward, depending on a few outcomes. What motivates you to wake up every morning and still walk into the classroom to students? Like, what 30 years of this work, you've seen the ups and downs. What wakes you up to say, I'm gonna do this another year or another day?
Yeah, I mean, it's more than one thing, you know. And you know, one thing, this may sound small, but one thing is, middle school kids are hilarious. They are hilarious, and there is never a boring day. You know, there's some people have jobs that just like it, you know, they're sitting in a cubicle all day, and it's whatever their job may be. It's like watching paint dry. You know, middle school, it's hard work. Not just middle school, but like every school, it's really hard work. The pace, the number of things that are all happening at the same time that you have to figure out how to handle, is unreal. And so you stay engaged. You know, we're like this, the stuff these kids say, the stuff they do, you know, we're cracking up all day long. And so I think that having humor in your day and having kids that keep things interesting, I probably wouldn't still be doing it otherwise. But I would say the big thing is that, you know, the needs that our children have, you know, as hard as things have gotten, as, you know, the 10,000 teachers that quit last year, you know, every one of those teachers, that there was an impact at that school. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure in every case, or nearly every case, it wasn't positive. In every single one of those cases, there's a kid who needs to have adults in their life that is helping to prepare them for the opportunities that they may not even know that they want, you know, but those opportunities are going to be there for them if they have that caring adult, if they have that educator who, you know, who knows how to connect with them and how to help turn on that light for them. And so, you know, that I know that may sound like a Hallmark card, you know, like a greeting card, but it's the truth, you know. And when you know that and you feel that responsibility, it motivates you too to keep doing the work, even though the circumstances are difficult and it seems like every year keeps getting harder. And I think that's true with the advocacy work and the politics and stuff that I like to get involved with too, is that, you know, North Carolina, you can just lay back and just let it all play out however it's going to. Or you can try to have an impact and make things better. And, you know, you may try to have that impact and things still get worse. And I've experienced that, you know, more times than I would care to admit. But to me, just like, you know, staying in the classroom and continuing to teach these students, you know, it doesn't seem like staying out of the fight is really an option either. Mm.
Okay, so I read on your blog, in your about the author section, that you do a lot of writing, like super early in the morning, and you have a French press by your side. So, like, are you a coffee snob, or you just prefer French press? What are you putting in the French press?
Good question. I would like to be a coffee snob. You know, every once in a while I get to drink these kind of high-end coffees, you know, like locally roasted. There's a place in Charlotte called Smelly Cat that has really good coffee and a really good name. But, you know, it's like $15 for a small bag, you know. Yeah. And unfortunately, my salary is determined by the General Assembly. And that really restricts my coffee options. And so the reason that I drink a French press is not because I think I'm fancy and I'm trying to be French or anything like that. It's because you get, like, the coffee, and then there's this thick layer of mud at the bottom. So you're actually getting, like, 3 cups of coffee's worth of coffee from drinking one coffee. And as for the fuel, it's whatever is on sale at Costco. And so I drink that coffee. Sometimes it doesn't taste as good as I would like it to, but then I use that resentment to fuel the fingers that are typing on this laptop, and so it all kind of works. But yeah, you may see, if we get a giant raise, you probably see my writing and advocacy skills start declining because I'm drinking Smelly Cat. Good question.
Are you just like black coffee, or do you do?
Okay. Yeah, just black.
Yeah.
See, the coffee is not my thing. I just drink it to get energy, and that's just when I need the energy. So there's that.
It works for that too.
Yeah. It works for that. It also keeps me up at night sometimes if I drink too much. So got to learn about balance with that. Cool. Well, thank you, Justin. Appreciate you for what you do, what you have been doing, what you'll continue to do for the many students that come through your doors in North Carolina. I know it's a lot of work. And I know, like I said, you have a big target on your back and the climate is not most favorable, but really appreciate you for doing the things and inspiring my young people to be, you know, whatever they're going to be, which I'm sure will be great things. So thank you for that. Thank you for coming out. We'll have you stick around just a little bit longer because we've got to close the show out, have a little fun, and do our usual things that we usually do. So me and Patrick has this thing called Bozo of the Week, and it's that time. So usually what I do is say, hey, Patrick, do you know what time it is?
I think so. Is it Bozo of the Week time?
It's Bozo of the Week time. And we're corny, we know it. This week's Bozo of the Week is someone that we talked about earlier and you know very well. It's our friend Michelle Morrow. For those of you that don't know or are not informed of what's going on, she is running for the highest office and being in control of our public education in North Carolina. She has, let's just say, a very interesting history. She ran for Wake County School Board in 2022.
Got crushed.
But she also had a very active social media. This was a person that participated in January 6th, and she's very proud of that. You can see it on her Twitter or X or whatever you guys call it, and other places. She's also supported the public execution of elected officials, including President Obama, when I guess she just wasn't happy with the work that he was doing.
Do you still stand by your comments about former President Barack Obama and that he should be executed, calling for the death of other presidents? Do you stand by that? Do you understand the concern that people have with this nomination that you now
have? I have a question. Do you vote in North Carolina? Then keep your eyes on your own paper.
So ask yourself a question. Is this the person you really want sitting over education? That's the bozo of the week, y'all. I don't want to say more. I just want to leave that there. That's the person we want sitting over education. So again, thank you. Don't forget, like, subscribe, follow, interact in the comments section. Make sure you list your favorite educator on whatever platform you're listening. Share that. They'll appreciate that for the work that they've done to impact your life and also the work that they continue to do to impact other students' lives. So make sure you share your favorite educator and share your memory with them. But before we go, three things, and you know what it is. Voter ID is in North Carolina. Make sure you have an accurate ID. Go get your ID now. Do not wait until the last minute. Go do it now. No disrespect to DMV, but we know how DMV or North Carolina can be sometimes. Go get your voter ID now. Know your voting status. Please check with the State Board of Elections. Know your voting status and educate yourself on the issues. Educate yourselves. And don't forget that voter ID is needed when you show up on election day, whether you show up on that day or early voting, that ID is needed. So make sure that your picture is accurate, your name and your address is accurate. Please make sure that we don't want any discrepancies during election time. Let's make sure that you bring everything you have to bring to make sure that your voice is heard.
And real quick, just on the part about educating yourself on the issues, if anyone out there listening or watching spends even 10 minutes researching any issue that's currently going on in the state, you likely will know more about it than the Republican that is running for whatever that position is. So just keep that in mind.
You know more than Dan Bishop. All right. Be safe out there. See you next time.